Welcome to the Andy Staples Show Brunch Edition. Sunday morning. Happy Sunday morning. We are recording this on Sunday morning because that's how long it took for Rutgers and Michigan to finish playing the dumbest, greatest game of the season. Michigan beats Rutgers in triple overtime. Does it mean anything? Probably not. But Ari Wasserman once again wrong because he predicted Michigan would cover and the Wolverines did not.
0-5 on Michigan games this year. 0-5. And I don't know. It's funny that we stayed up as late as we did to watch that game. I don't really know what we were watching. And, I guess I'm just used to being wrong about this, but I'm going on notice right now. And I'm saying I'm no longer blindly thinking that anybody on that team cares about anything. In fact, I don't even know if I want to talk about
that. Did you see Cade McNamara flexing when he got into the end zone?
Yeah, I saw the celebration. I saw everything. And I'm not sure if that is not the worst case scenario.
I was thinking about asking you the same question. So I'm not entirely sure how I feel about this. It's not worse than losing because winning is never worse than losing. The question is, do the people in charge at Michigan understand that winning really didn't make things any better here?
Yeah, I was just thinking to myself, like, as Michigan was celebrating very excitedly, and they should, you know, I hate when people go, look at them celebrating. They're kids, they won the football game, let them celebrate. But as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, so this is where we're at with this program. And I don't know exactly what it's going to take for them to move forward and do something differently. But if this win is some way restoring faith or making them think twice about whether or not this is the right coaching staff or the right regime for the job, then I think that losing is counterproductive. I think anything that inches your program closer to keeping Harbaugh for another year and keeping this coaching staff intact is counterproductive to what needs to be done to turn this thing around. Because regardless of whether or not they won or lost, anybody who watched this game knows that there's something clearly missing. It was clearly missing before this week. It's still clearly missing. And frankly, Andy, like as fun as it was to make all the Twitter jokes and watch Big Ten after midnight and all the crazy stuff that happened in this game, I just feel like the topic in general of what is happening is starting to just like become a little old because it's so clear. It's not even so much about whether or not it should happen. It's why hasn't it happened yet almost?
Well, the thing I would say, and why hasn't happened yet, is because Michigan doesn't do things midseason and they won't do anything midseason here. It's 4 more weeks before they have to make a decision. So they'll wait the 4 weeks that they have to wait. But And I don't think Michigan fans are under any illusions about what they saw. They realize this is Rutgers, that they barely escaped Rutgers in 3 overtimes. And I think if you have any sort of illusions about it, all you have to do is say, what would the final score have been had Michigan been playing someone good? And I think that answers your question.
Do people play that game, or do people just kind of take things at face value?
I think intelligent people play that game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we know for sure what Rutgers is. And I think that like Greg Schiano should get some credit for making them a team with a pulse.
They are much better than horrifically awful is still not good. It's still not a team Michigan should be in 3 overtimes with if you're Michigan.
Trust me, you don't have to convince me of that. But the one thing I will say is that there is a little bit of a different hue to struggling with Rutgers on the road during a year where they're bad rather than being horrifically awful. So, you know, but everything that we have seen from the context of what this season has shown, it didn't take this Rutgers game to get to this point of what the hell's going on there. I mean, we were there 2.5 weeks ago, and now it's just more continuation of how bad is Michigan. And if they're not the worst team in the conference, because they've got 2 conference wins, they're one of the 3 or 4 worst teams in the league. And, you know, they made some changes offensively in the middle of the game. They went to McNamara, and it looked like he gave them a spark. And, you know, maybe Michigan's been playing with the wrong quarterback.
He gave them a spark against Wisconsin. Why did they have to wait another week to figure out he gives them a spark?
I mean, if this is a segue into questionable coaching decisions, then I guess we can go back into that road. But I think that the entire blanket of what leadership is in charge of this program is has been a discussion point for the last 2 weeks. And regardless of how things look moving forward, it's going to be a discussion in 4 weeks and they have to make a decision. And, you know, to me, the ship has sailed on hope for this team. We are now in the Rich Rod 3-9 year one mode. This is the worst Michigan team that we've seen in our lifetimes. And it's comparable to all the things that they've been wanting to avoid. So I don't know how else to say it in a more, you know, nice way, but this is a complete dumpster fire. And the fact that they won doesn't change my mind about what I was watching there.
You ready for a silver lining?
What's the silver lining? I'd love to hear it.
Unlike everybody else, Michigan did not give Jim Harbaugh an extension when no one else was trying to hire him. You want to know who
That's
did?
That's happened a few times, hasn't it?
You want to know who did? Tennessee did with Jeremy Pruitt in January. You want to know who also did? Nebraska did with Scott Frost last year, about a year ago this week. How's it going for those programs right now?
You know, it's funny because I saw you tweeting about Frost on Saturday, and I was thinking to myself, you know how we always talk about Michigan and who are they going to get? I think it's a bigger question for Nebraska. Who are they going to get?
Well, I don't think they're going to fire Scott Frost. And they really shouldn't because they put themselves on the hook for $10 million more when they extended him last year when no one was calling him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's in hindsight with losing to Illinois and, you know, being in the position that Nebraska's in, it looks terrible. But on the other hand, too, I'm sure that they've been at least committed to how long, no matter how bad it looks or how ugly it is, at least 5 years with this guy, right?
Well, the thing
so with, it's not as Tennessee, bad on the surface as what it.
The thing with Tennessee and with Nebraska, I'm not sure more churn helps you in either case, unless you can bring in a sure thing. And how many sure things are there? Matt Fortuna and I talked about this last week. How many quote unquote sure things have actually worked out in this century? I would argue that Urban Meyer did twice at Florida and Ohio State. Brian Kelly did it at Notre Dame. And Nick Saban, when he got hired at Alabama. There aren't many more. That's pretty much it.
I think Urban Meyer, second time around at Ohio State, and Nick Saban at Alabama are the golden examples of that.
Well, but Urban Meyer, the first time at Florida, he won two national titles. It's more than he won at Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I know. But going into that hire, you'll know better than I do. But what was the feel of like that
this
hire?
Is the
was
savior of the program.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just because like when Ohio State hired him, it was the savior of the program who had already won two national titles. So I just think that like accomplishment meets expectation a little bit more down the line. And the only other comparable hire of the last 5 to 10 years is Harbaugh at Michigan. He's the only one that I think would rise to the same level of confidence and savior as Nick Saban and Urban round two.
I'm just amazed that when he did win 10 games in three of his first 4 years, that they didn't go create. They didn't give him the happy extension, the we love you extension. Like they didn't do that. It's amazing.
Well, I think part of it too is probably because Jim doesn't really participate in contract extensions. Doesn't play the game. So I think that, you know, it might have put Michigan in a better position if they are to, you know, stay put and keep him around for another year to get out of that contract without a major buyout. And that might put them in a position to spend some more money on the guy who eventually replaces him. But in terms of the can't miss real deal savior of the program type hires, I think that those are fewer and far between. And a lot of times it's fan bases trying to talk themselves into the next thing that's coming rather than testimony. And like Scott Frost definitely had the same aura about him. And
well,
certainly
he had taken a team from 0-12 to 12-0 in 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Right. And he is, he also fits the category too of being a Nebraska person, a former player and graduate and a guy who's won there as a player at the highest level and all the things that make it romantically exciting. You know what I mean? Like it's a romantic idea to think this is the guy returning home. It's the same thing with Jim Harbaugh, and Harbaugh was coaching in a Super Bowl. And I think that when guys have testimony, that's more of a powerful thing than it is than just excitement based on program ties. But yeah, I don't know that unless there is another Nick Saban who falls out of the sky and I don't even really know who is, the better thing for programs to do when building a program is to find a person who's motivated, that has a tactical idea of how they want to run the program. And it doesn't have to be somebody who's went to college there. It doesn't have to be somebody who already has won elsewhere. It doesn't have to be somebody like that. There's been a lot of coaches who have had a lot of success being hired based on athletic directors having a savvy eye for what it takes to win at the highest level and then really? Proving it by doing it. It doesn't
Lincoln,
have to be
Lincoln Riley,
a recycled Ryan Day. Person.
I mean, now these are successors. These are internal hires, but there's still people like if I had told you when Lincoln Riley was the offensive coordinator at East Carolina. Now, there were some of us who were in the know that knew that Lincoln Riley was a rising star, but even those of us who knew that Lincoln Riley was a rising star, if you said, this guy's going to be the head coach at Oklahoma in 4 years, and he's going to win the Big 12 the first 3 years he's the head coach and make the playoff every year and have two Heisman Trophy winners that are also the number one pick in the NFL, I would say, you're crazy. That no, he's not going from East Carolina and doing that. He's the offensive coordinator at East Carolina. No, that's insane. But that's exactly what happened. And you're right. It is more about finding that person than it is, did that person go to school here?
Yeah, I think that it's like easy to, like, because there's probably people at home who will roll their eyes and say, well, Lincoln Riley and Ryan Day, or Lincoln Riley and Ryan Day took over at programs that were already kind of built. And,
yeah, but imagine how badly they could have screwed up being the guy after the guy.
Well, I think that, that's absolutely true. I think that Ohio State is at a place right now where an even average coach should win 10 games there with his eyes closed. I don't think you really have to do I mean, Ryan Day has done things and has improved in the recruiting rankings and has built an offense and got Ohio State to the playoff and has done a lot of things that, you know, are as good or if not better than Urban Meyer. That's a different discussion. But I do think that if you're at certain programs that have built-in advantages, it's easier to succeed at the highest level than it is to build something. And Ryan Day didn't build. He drove the car that was already built. So, and that's not a knock on him. You know, he's the perfect hire and somebody who might be at Ohio State for 15 years and win multiple national championships. But in terms of how quickly this stuff happens too, I think he's also the perfect example of it, because 2 years before he was hired at Ohio State, nobody knew who this guy was. And now look at him. You know, like you were talking about Lincoln Riley 5 years ago, 6 years ago, people didn't know who he was. People didn't know who Jeff Hafley was, who now is one of the highest profile young coaches at BC now, 3 years ago. It doesn't take much. And I know that there's a lot of resume building and a lot of thought that has to go into who your hires are going to be and who's going to be next on your program. But a lot of times too, I think these young coaches with awesome minds for how they want to build the game and with dynamic personalities are more than qualified to run the program, maybe even more so than a recycled name that has been around the block a few times, because it's a new game. It's a new era. And recruiting is a new world. Connecting with kids is a new way of doing it, especially now with the pandemic and, you know, recruiting nonstop with the cell phones and stuff. You have to be able to do this stuff. I think that hiring a young dynamic personality might be the better route here than hiring somebody who you might perceive to be a can't miss because he went to your college.
Well, the alma mater thing is highly overrated. The guys from Sports Source Analytics will tell you they've run the numbers on it and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't give you any sort of advantage or disadvantage. It just doesn't mean anything. So
I agree.
It makes you happy because the person knows the fight song, or, you know,
it's a warm and fuzzy thing. It's a press conference thing. The guy who can come in and win a press conference and one of us, and, you know, there's some importance to that, but the importance of that,
there
is
no
importance winning over
to
the
winning
fan
press
base.
Conference. None.
Yeah. But the one thing that it does do is it hypes up the fan base. It makes people think that they're on the right track, and maybe even donations go up. People get excited. There is some sort of, you know, feel to getting in the right mind frame with the right guy. But other than that, where you went to school and whether or not you went there, I think a lot of times programs who are in a position that need to do something to get their program back on track are in need of a shakeup, of doing something different. And sometimes I think doing things and viewing things and approaching things the same way as they've always been approached is a detriment, not an advantage. You want somebody to come in who's going to do something different.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Nebraska and Tennessee do. I don't think you want to do anything now, because more churn is not necessarily a good thing, but you shouldn't have extended your guys either, because they hadn't done anything to deserve it. So if you're an AD and your coach is marginally successful this season but hasn't really been successful any other time, don't extend him. There's nobody looking for him. I mean, unless you know he's got another offer on the table and you really, really want to keep him, don't do it. And even then, maybe tell him to take it if he's not that great, because you can always find somebody replacement level. So let's talk about the playoff, because on Tuesday, the playoff selection committee will release its first rankings. The game I thought was most interesting on Saturday in relation to those playoff rankings was Ohio State and Indiana, because Ohio State is not the juggernaut we thought they were. Now, Indiana's good, and beating Indiana in a one-score game, there is no shame in that. But that tells me that it's not a given that Ohio State is just going to wreck everyone the rest of the way.
I think they're going to wreck everybody the rest of the way in the regular season. I don't think that they're going to win the college football playoff.
Will they wreck Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game? Because yes. That Northwestern defense is nasty.
Yeah, I don't know how you view the game. I'd be interested to hear how you view the Indiana game. But I think that aside from some secondary breakdowns for in the last quarter and a half, that was 35-7. There was pretty big wreckage going on there. And I don't know that
and
anybody
then it wasn't.
Ever felt that.
And if Sean Wade doesn't get that pick six, if Penix makes a better choice on that throw, we may be having a very different conversation right now.
Yeah. I don't know if you watched the whole thing. I didn't watch that game thinking there was any legitimate chance that Ohio State was going to lose at any moment of that game. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's maybe that's a little bit different, but here's what I'll say, Andy. I came into the weekend thinking that Ohio State was the clear favorite to win the national championship, and I no longer feel that way.
Yeah. I don't think there is a favorite. Like I look at Ohio State and Notre Dame and Clemson and Alabama and Florida, and they're all in kind of the same bucket.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of a fun thing for the season. And, you know, the thing that people like to do, at least in Columbus, Ohio, and I know this quite well, is they like to compare it to the past and compare it to last season. And last year's Ohio State team was the best team of the 10 years I was on that beat. And this team is not nearly as good as that team because there's some deficiencies in the defensive side of the ball, as we all saw. There's some problems in the secondary. They've got some personnel that they've got to clean up and, you know, maybe make some changes. And I believe that they'll, you know, improve and continue to run through their schedule. But in terms of whether or not they're going to be able to stop Clemson or Alabama or Florida or whoever they end up playing in the playoff, you know, that's a real life question and a real life concern. The thing I will say is, I don't know that anybody is stopping anybody in the playoff once you get to that level. And it's a matter of whether or not you can score 45 or 50 points this year. And even Nick Saban.
And also, how many guys do you have healthy when you get to that point?
Yeah, exactly. And who knows how that's all going to play out. But Nick Saban said it this week. He said, I think the days of winning a national championship based on your elite level defenses are over. And, you know, that's not a way to kind of let Ohio State off the hook. I think they deserve a lot of criticism for the way that they played. And, you know, Indiana too deserves some credit.
They're built just like every other national title contender. That's
right. But we all thought they were invincible coming into this week. Even, you know, some of the deficiencies had been shown. But the more you move forward and the more these things get exposed, the more tendency there is for them to be exposed again in the future when it matters the most. So, you know, Penix is a nice player. They have some nice receivers. We saw it. Indiana can score some points. They're a tough team. They're a confident team. I give Tom Allen all the credit in the world for what he's built there. That's a hell of a team. Ohio State lines up with those deficiencies against Clemson, and it's a real, real problem for them. And, you know, I think that Ohio State can score 45, 50 on anybody in the country too. But I don't necessarily know that you can feel confident about your ability to win a national championship when you don't have players in the right position. You're not making proper adjustments, and you might not have the right safety on the field, depending on how things pan out. So, you know, I think that the talent gap between those two teams is something that, you know, I'm going to always want to talk about. And I still think that if you watched the majority of that game, you saw the talent discrepancy between the number one or number two or three team in Ohio State and compared to Indiana and their supposed number nine ranking. You know, Indiana got some points at the end of the game and made it a little bit closer than people thought. But for the most part, I thought that Ohio State was the dominant force. If they play any real offense with a quarterback that's going to be drafted in the first round of the NFL draft, which is a 95% chance of that happening in the playoff, whether it's Trask whether it's Trevor Lawrence or whether it's even Mac Jones now, all of a sudden, Ohio State's got to clean that stuff up.
We'll be right back after these words. How would you do this if you are the committee? Who's your top four on Tuesday?
Yeah, so do you want to go rankings together or all by one?
No, we just okay. We just go together.
Okay, do you want to go from four to one or the or let's reverse? Let's go
one to four. It's just easier that way.
Okay. All right, so my number one would be Alabama.
Okay, that would also be mine. My number two would be Notre Dame.
My number two would be Notre Dame as well. My number three would be Ohio State.
Okay. My number three would also be Ohio State. My number four would be Clemson, I think. But I don't know. I think it might be Texas A&M because they beat Florida. And Clemson doesn't have a win of that caliber.
Yeah, mine would be Clemson just because if we're doing the whole eye test thing this year, I think that we just have to, you know, go with what we think is true. And I don't know that, you know, do you believe that Texas A&M could beat Clemson? I don't. So I'm just not going to do that. And especially considering the fact that Clemson's one loss, they were missing some key players on the defensive line. They were missing Trevor Lawrence. I still think that those things matter, even if, you know, at the end of the year, Clemson's going to have a chance to avenge that victory potentially and play Notre Dame again. And if they win, then they'll basically erase that loss. But in terms of who I think the four best teams in college football are right now, those are the four. And Notre Dame, I think, you know, actually is probably the fourth best team out of those four. But they get the number two nod because they have the best win in college football
and
this year.
And they're probably the safest because if they play a close game against Clemson and Charlotte, as long as they haven't lost the rest of the way, I think they probably still get in.
What do you think about the recency thing? Do you think that it's all about resume, or do you think that if there's a fourth spot on the line and you have a candidate like Texas A&M or Florida there who, or even, you know, some of the other teams might creep
up? Florida's only way in is beat Alabama. And if they beat Alabama, they're in. Unless they lose somewhere between now and the SEC championship game.
Yeah, I guess I would take a one-loss Notre Dame team who lost in the ACC championship game over Texas A&M.
That would be the bigger question is, you know, if Alabama wins, then A&M comes into play because they've got the win against Florida. So then you can just say, Alabama's in, will you put Texas A&M in if they're 9-1? And I don't know.
I don't know how you could possibly make that argument.
You just their you best would have to claim think their to win fame. Against Florida is that
so
their win.
You're going to put the Texas A&M Aggies into the college football playoff when their best win is over the second best team in the SEC, and the team that you're going to leave right out is the team that lost to Clemson in the ACC championship, having already beaten them once this year.
I don't think that's what I think, and that's why I said Notre Dame's the safest.
Yeah, they're a very safe pick. But I also don't know that I would, and I think you'd probably agree with this, but on a neutral field in January, I don't pick Notre Dame to beat any of the other three that we put in the playoff.
I mean, look, we saw him beat Clemson. I realized Trevor wasn't there. I think that the missing the guys on defense was probably the bigger deal because DJ Uiagalelei threw for a bunch of yards against Notre Dame's defense. So, and look, having watched a lot of Florida and some Alabama and Clemson again and Ohio State today, Notre Dame can play with those teams. This Notre Dame team is probably better equipped to play those teams than any of the ones in the past. So
doesn't it seem kind of light right now in terms of the teams that have a chance? It seems to me that there's not very many options. And it's like Oregon's down there at number 13 in the coaches poll.
Well, this is okay. Here's my next question.
I don't know if Oregon's alive, but who else is alive?
Okay. Where do you put Cincinnati? They beat UCF and the hold the ball, run the clock out almost backfired on them because they fumbled that last snap. But they beat UCF 36-33. They milked the clock at the end. It was, you know, they probably should have just punched it in and won by a little bit more. But they did hold one of the most explosive offenses in college football down to a reasonable level. They did not destroy them like they did SMU and Memphis. But where do you put them? Because in the history of the college football playoff, the committee, when it starts ranking, has punished teams that it does not feel play a hard schedule. And so that's why I expect BYU to be ranked very low. And I expect Cincinnati to be ranked lower than they are in the AP poll and in the coaches poll.
Yeah, I think I've got a sneaky suspicion that Indiana is going to be ranked ahead of both BYU and Cincinnati.
I think you're exactly right.
And it's not that's just the way it is. Indiana has wins over Big Ten East powers that are down, but they still do. And they went on the road and played at Ohio State and had the ball with a chance to tie it with 30 seconds left in the game. And regardless of what you think, how that game played out, that is the reality of it. And I think there's something to it. The thing I just don't know is that if Texas A&M isn't a legitimate contender at the end of the year and Florida ends up losing to Alabama again, you might have no choice, depending on what happens with Oregon, but to put one of those two teams in. Because I don't know who – I'm looking at the list right now of potential teams that you could try to sneak in, and it's like, who else is there?
Are
Indiana's eliminated now.
Northwestern can win lost. Its way in. Northwestern can win its way in. But they have
right.
to win.
Ohio
State. So
– yeah. And that's going to be the reality for every Big Ten West team that has a good season for the rest of the year.
Do you have any confidence in Oregon after what you saw against UCLA? Because I'm not sure.
I don't have any confidence in Oregon in terms of whether or not they can play against the top three teams in the country.
Correct.
But I think that's what I'm talking discussion about. No, I have no confidence of anybody. I don't have any confidence in Texas A&M playing against those teams either. I think that, but that's a different discussion than which team can play their way into four, because there's no other way to settle this. And like Oregon, as an undefeated Pac-12 champ, even if every single one of their wins is an ugly UCLA-like win, they still might be able to earn their way into that fourth spot, because we're looking at a situation right now where there's no identifiable number four. And the only way that they can get past that, I guess, is if Clemson beats Notre Dame and they still put Notre Dame in under the scenario that we just said. I just don't usually at this point of the year, we're in this position, but we're in this position because all the teams have played more than two or three games and half the teams haven't. So I don't really know how to put this, but Oklahoma's eliminated.
That was my next question. Do we agree that Oklahoma's eliminated? Because I think losing to Kansas State and Iowa State eliminates Oklahoma. I don't care.
I think
they found
eliminated.
Themselves. They look like a better team. They look like a completely different team right now. And they're probably going to be that one team you do not want to play in a New Year's Six Bowl because they're peaking at the right time. But they lost to Kansas State and Iowa State. You can't put them in the playoff.
Yeah. Until a two-loss team makes the playoff, I'm not going to consider them as an option, especially considering the fact that in the Oklahoma example, and I know that we're not supposed to do this and we're not supposed to acknowledge that this happens, but there is the committee isn't supposed to go back and think, how did things go last year? And okay, rightfully so. But if you're a two-loss team, you lose the benefit of the doubt. And I would rather watch BYU play Alabama or Cincinnati play Alabama just for the sake of something new and for the sake of letting something new happen than I would just watch Alabama beat Oklahoma 56-15 again. It's just I don't have any interest in seeing that as a fake committee member. And I know that, again, you're not supposed to go back in time and let things that happened in the past dick, but they're human beings. And I don't know that there's anything that Oklahoma could do that would make me want to put them in the playoff. Not even over Texas A&M, who might have a chance at the playoff only because they got blown out by Alabama and weren't fortunate enough to have to play anybody good for the rest of the year. But even that is more of a confidence boost to me than putting that Oklahoma team in. Until they can play defense for an entire regular season, I think we know what they are.
Yeah. So we've got our top four: Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson, and then Florida and Texas A&M in some order at 5 and 6, right? Or do you think somebody else sneaks into there?
No, Florida 5, A&M 6. And I think the best probably way to get the four best teams into the playoff would be if Florida somehow beat Bama in the SEC championship game. Florida sneaks in, you still take Alabama, and then you take the winner of the Clemson-Notre Dame rematch and then Ohio State, assuming they're an undefeated Big Ten champ. And I think that would be the most exciting Final Four playoff field.
Yeah, so this is going to be interesting. I'm very curious to see where they put Cincinnati, where they put BYU, and where they put Oklahoma, and Indiana. I think to your point, how much respect do they give to Indiana for winning so far and then nearly winning against Ohio State. Because I actually think Northwestern will be ahead of Indiana because Northwestern does have the win against Wisconsin, and Indiana, none of Indiana's wins are as good as that.
Is Northwestern going to be a top 10 team on Tuesday?
Yeah, I think so.
Because they just beat Wisconsin and did it in a pretty impressive fashion. You know, I don't know what's going on with some of these other teams, but Northwestern seems to have a legit defense.
Well, and this, you know, I was, the win against Iowa looks better.
Is now looking great.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was just so hoping that this Wisconsin team would be different. That's what we were talking about in the on the Friday show. Do you lay the points and do you take? And I laid, and I was like, you know what, this Wisconsin team's got Mertz. It's a different team. I like them. It's not going to be one of those clunkers in Evanston like they all are. And I was so wrong. It's exactly what they usually are. And Northwestern got
same
the win.
Same defense Northwestern plays against them every time they play. Like they have their number.
Zap me. Yeah. Zap me if I ever want to lay points in Evanston ever again for Wisconsin. So, but like, I think that Northwestern has earned the benefit of the doubt to maybe even be in the top eight. And, you know, you put these teams in there that even if you're not 100% confident in their ability to beat the top three, I still think as it pertains to the first rankings, you put teams in earned.
If you're going to air with Northwestern because they have earned their way there.
Yeah. And I agree. I would put it's interesting, too, because you have a few unbeaten teams that might not make the top 10, like Oregon might not be in the top 10 because A, they've only played three games, and B, they almost lost to UCLA on Saturday. Coastal Carolina, I don't know what you do with them. I don't know what you do with Marshall. There's certain games and teams in these group of five conferences that have had pretty good seasons. Liberty, where do they lose?
Liberty lost. State.
So they're
out.
They had a
field goal blocked in the waning seconds. And NC State's going to be a weird one. They are now, I believe, 5-3 or 6-3. I can't remember how many games they've played, but they have a -2 point differential on the season. So it's been a weird year. They also did not get Clemson or Notre Dame on their schedule. So they lucked out there. But just a weird one. While we're in the ACC, let's talk about the thing that woke us all up on Saturday morning. Well, I was awake when that early, but Florida State and Clemson could not come to terms on playing, each kind of pointing the finger at the other. Florida State saying Clemson had a symptomatic player who didn't test positive till Friday, and so they weren't comfortable playing. And Clemson saying, hey, we're here, let's play. They want to play that game in December. Something tells me if they do play it, Clemson's maybe not going to take its starters out as early as they normally would.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The whole report that Fortuna wrote was that a girlfriend of one of the players tested positive and the player had to go. You know, it's just the threshold for risk assessment on these is understandable, but it's also very small. And, you know, if teams aren't going to want to play because of things happen like this, then we're going to start seeing, and we have seen continued results like this. So I don't know, like, if you can actually resent or be mad at the opposing team that you're supposed to playing for trying to err on the side of caution.
No, I mean, look, and people are saying, well, FSU didn't want to play because they're going to kill. Look, if they have to reschedule the game, FSU is going to get killed then. So I don't think that was the driving force. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, and if every single time anybody is going to cancel a game or do this, someone's going to cry wolf and they're afraid to play, and it's all whatever. I mean,
We've seen it with Hurricanes where they point fingers at each other and be like, you're ducking us. No, you're ducking us. You're ducking us. It's dumb.
Now, I don't buy any of that stuff.
And you have stuff like, okay, so Mississippi State brought like 48 guys to Athens. And by the way, almost won the game. So
that's what I wanted to tell you, Andy. Like, there's been a lot of teams who have like been missing 20 or 25 guys because of COVID and are like winning and competing at a really high level. And it's making me question everything I know about football.
I was thinking as I was watching that game that was a Mike Leach kind of saying, here's the guys who are with us, and this is why we decided to play, because we wanted to show these guys that when you're bought in, you can do something. And look, they played really well. And they were in the game against Georgia. JT Daniels starts for Georgia. I believe he set a record for passing yardage tonight or came close. And yeah, you know, he said after the game that he was medically cleared between games one and two, and it was the coach's decision not to play him. I'm not sure. Again, Mississippi State has not been that good this season. This is sort of like the Rutgers-Michigan thing, where I know the Georgia people are like, well, why didn't he start against Florida? Why didn't he do... I'm not sure he would have been much better starting against Florida. He was good starting against Mississippi State, a shorthanded Mississippi State, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, but UCLA too. UCLA was missing like 24 players, and they almost beat Oregon. Like, I remember when I first started covering Ohio State and Urban Meyer got hired, he used to complain his first year at as the head coach there about how Ohio State was down three scholarships as part of their penalty for some of the carryover stuff with Patgate stuff and how big of a deal that was. And so, like, it's always stuck in my head that every scholarship on a roster is important. And now I'm seeing these teams who are missing 20 or 25 guys playing 53. I mean, Mississippi for
loses a bunch of players Georgia's the year before is down scholarship. I mean, LSU's down scholarship.
I know, but going on the road without the players, going on the road with 51 players is a drastic problem. And it's like not playing out that way. And I don't understand it. It's like weird. It's like every single time Bruce Feldman tweets something like so-and-so team is going to be without 17 players because of positive COVID tests, the lines move, and it like has no bearing on the games. It makes no sense.
Well, there's a couple things there. All the teams are banged up and missing people because you also have injuries and everything else.
Right.
But also there is a little bit of we all we got when you're down a bunch of guys. So the team may rally a little bit. And I think that's probably what happened with Mississippi State. Is they rallied a little bit, especially think about how many guys have left and how many high profile guys have left during the season. You know, they probably had a, you know, all for one, one for all mentality that they probably haven't had most of the year. And so maybe that affected the performance. I don't know. Or maybe they're not very good and Georgia's not very good. I mean, that's the thing. It's just like the Rutgers-Michigan game. Michigan won the game, but again, imagine if they'd been playing somebody good.
Yeah, I mean, how is Georgia favored by 25 to begin with?
I don't know. Because that team is
was
not
it the JT Daniels effect?
I don't think so because they were favored by a lot before he was announced as a starter. Yeah. I think it was because Mississippi State was so hapless for so long. They looked pretty functional on offense on Saturday, which it's the first time really since I mean, I know they beat Vanderbilt, but the first time really since the LSU game that they've looked that functional on offense. So I think that's a little piece of it is nobody knew when that was going to happen. And oh, by the way, our which LSU shows up, I was a little bit of both of the LSUs that showed up. So maybe that was the true LSU we saw against Arkansas. And they did just enough. Felipe Franks gifts him a touchdown with that. Well, Jabril Cox made a really nice play on that ball. And then Arkansas doesn't convert a third down all day. And if they'd converted one or two, they probably win. So I think the LSU, the real LSU is somewhere, like we said, in between what we saw against South Carolina and what we saw against Auburn. And then the real Auburn, I think, is what we saw tonight against Tennessee, which is pretty good, but I don't think they're beating Alabama next week.
And then we saw the real Tennessee again.
Yeah, well, we saw the real Tennessee on one drive, and that was when Eric Gray was gaining 10 yards up the middle every single play, and they decided to throw, and lo and behold, 104-yard interception return for a touchdown for Smoke Monday. That was the real Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, those guys can't get out
of
their
own way. I felt
so
bad for the Tennessee fans on Saturday night, because as Eric Gray is just churning up yardage, and the line is blocking and resetting the line of scrimmage on every play, You could see the Tennessee fans on Twitter just waiting for the piano to fall on their heads. They couldn't even get excited about really dominant run game that they had going there in the early second half of that game. And then the piano fell and they're like, Oh, well, that's it. I guess that's it. We got to pay some bills, but we will be right back breaking down all of Saturday's action.
Andy, that was like a funny thing that I just want to play a game with you real quick, because I just, something that you struck, said just struck a chord with me. You said you felt bad for Tennessee fans. Which fan base in college football right now do you feel the worst for?
Nebraska, because it feels like there's no way out of it. It feels like it's never going to end. Like, they get one little shred of happiness beating Penn State, and they almost didn't do that. Like, Penn State almost came back. So they get one little shred of happiness, and then bam! Illinois is clobbering them by halftime. Like, they just can never be, they're never allowed to be happy.
So you think it's worse for Nebraska than, okay, Texas?
Okay, Texas, I don't know yet, because if Texas wins next week, Texas is in good position to make the Big 12 championship game. If Texas does not win against Iowa State, well, then we bring up all those questions again.
Okay, and then Oklahoma doesn't count because they've had too much success to count.
Yeah,
Penn State, 0-5.
I think if you're Penn State, you go, this year sucks. 2020 sucks, and it's going to end, and it'll be different later. Because this year in no way resembles any other year of the past five. So just throw it out. It's fine. It's a terrible year, and let it be a terrible year, and just start from scratch next year.
Okay, I'm going to keep going. Okay.
All right.
Michigan.
You see the light at the end of the tunnel, because I don't think they're going to give him an extension. I know everybody's like, oh, they're working on an extension. Listen. They don't do anything till after the season. You know what's during the season? The Ohio State game. That game will get played, and that will eliminate any talk of an extension.
Florida State.
Okay, they might be there. They might be there. Because I don't know. I don't know how much worse it can get. And I keep thinking they can't get worse because they still have some good players. But it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So they might, but I also think unlike Nebraska, Florida State fans are resigned to this is year zero. Nebraska year zero keeps happening again and again. Like, if Florida State is like this 2 years from now, then they'll be where Nebraska people are.
Michigan State.
They got a dose of happiness beating Michigan. They got that ray of sunshine. And I think that's going to carry them through the rest of this horrific 2020.
Okay. What about South Carolina?
They fired their guy. They took their medicine, wrote the check. Now they're going to hire somebody. We'll see how excited they get about that, because they'll get if it's the right person, they'll get super excited. So they'll at least be happy for an offseason. Now that doesn't guarantee that they're going to get any happiness when they start playing games again, but at least they can be happy for an offseason.
Okay, I've only got one more, and then I'll stop with the game, but Tennessee.
I feel bad for them. I don't know what you do, because just like I said earlier, I don't think more churn is good for that program. And I know you got the people saying, oh, go hire Hugh Freeze right now. He'll win with this roster. Maybe. But you got to get Greg Sankey to sign off on that. I don't know if he's going to. And also, you'd have to pay Jeremy Pruitt a fortune. And I'm not sure you're in a position to do that. So I think you may just have to lump it and hope that Pruitt can make some staff changes. I mean, he's going to make staff changes. He fired his freaking D-line coach in the middle of the Kentucky game. So you know that's going to happen. But it doesn't feel it doesn't feel like there's a way forward. Now, it was interesting, because on that drive where Eric Gray was just blasting down the field and then it ended with the 104-yard pick six, Joe Tessitore and Greg McElroy were positing the idea of a sixth year in college for Jarrett Garantano, which I'm sure was not Jarrett Garantano's original plan, but it may be his plan now. And they never said outright it would be at Tennessee. I think the implication was it would be at another school. But then you had Tennessee fans thinking, wait, we might have to live this year over again? No. And so I think Tennessee and Nebraska fans are the most are probably neck and neck for most miserable right now.
It just seems to me, and I don't know if it's just kind of where we are right now, but there is a abnormal amount of blue bloods that you could say are down.
Yeah.
Penn State's down. Michigan's down. Florida State is down. Miami, to a certain extent, even though they're having a pretty good year.
They're happy right now. This is the best year they've had in a long time.
Texas is down.
Yes.
Oklahoma's down a little bit. I'm just talking about right now.
They lost two games.
Yeah, down for what they are supposed to be, I guess. You know, it's just a lot of teams that used to be great. I mean, UCLA, I don't even know if that's a blue blood, but they're down.
Yeah, they're not a blue
blood. LSU is having a down year.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It just it just seems like really hard for a lot of these guys to you know, maintain success over the long periods of time. And it just like seems to me like right now that most blue bloods that were the best teams in college football 5 to 15 years ago are all kind of going through a rough patch right now.
This is also a super strange year. I mean, we have to admit that and accept that some of the things that are happening this year are not going to carry over. Like, this is why the Penn State thing, I'm not that.
But you think this is pandemic related for a lot of these teams?
Not necessarily pandemic related, but just a string of events. Like Penn State, Micah Parsons opts out. Journey Brown has to retire. Devin Ford's hurt on the first series. Pat Freiermuth is now out for the season. I mean, every single bad thing that could happen to them has happened. Like, you're going to have a bad year when that happens. You just are.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you an example of this from a more normal time. Notre Dame had a terrible year in 2016. Horrific. They've been really good since then. Now, they had to make some changes, but they've been really, really good since then. They didn't fire Brian Kelly. Now, granted, they overhauled most of the coaching staff, but it is possible to just have a bad year and then get back to being good.
Yeah, you know, and I think that it's probably not the right thing to do to take one bad year and then put a team in the dumps overall in the program. I just like look at a lot of the things that you talk about with Penn State and you're like, yeah, well, every little thing that could have gone wrong did go wrong. And of course, that's going to be a really hard thing to overcome.
They're not doing well in the state in the class of 2021. I know that. It's not.
Yeah.
Good.
I just don't know. Like, I just don't know what I look to Penn State and I look at them. I don't go, here is the reason for hope other than they were kind of good the last 5 years before it.
But that's the reason. There has
to be, that's the reason.
Proof of concept. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, what has Michigan done over the last 5 years to suggest that they can win the Big Ten title?
I have no faith that they can win anything ever again.
What has Penn State done over the last 5 years to show you they could win the Big Ten title? Oh, I know. They've won the Big Ten title.
Ohio State, and they've won the Big Ten title. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that's why proof of concept means something. It counts for something. So that's why I'm not ready to just throw them out and say, oh, this is going to be a lost decade for them because they're having the worst year ever this year. They're having a bad year. And I don't think it's going to get any better. But that's okay. They're going to have another chance next year.
Yeah. I do think, too, that, you know, having covered Ohio State for as long as I did, it kind of clouds my mind of, like, what normal is. Because what's normal there isn't normal anywhere else.
But, buddy, I grew up in SEC country, and my first experience in real college football is walking onto the team that won the national championship. So I assure you, you can get your priorities really out of whack about what constitutes success. And
Yeah.
You're exactly right. That's the problem is, if you look at it as if you didn't win the national title, you failed, then you're probably going to be unhappy. But there's really only a few programs that should feel that way. Ohio State should feel that way. Alabama, Clemson. I think Georgia should feel that way, and they do. They're unhappy. But everybody doesn't need to feel that way.
When you look at the blue blood programs, I think it's a little bit – like the standard at Alabama or now Clemson or Ohio State isn't the standard at the schools between number 7 and number 20 overall. But when I look at the way a lot of these teams are built, how many losses would it have to take? How many people would have to opt out? How many injuries? how many unfortunate events would it have to take for one of these teams to go do this to start that way? And then I look at Penn State and the threshold between losing one game and losing five is so much lower for programs like that. And it makes me think, is this just a reminder of how far off Penn State is, even on a good year, even with Journey Brown, even with Micah Parsons? Are they that far off of having the type of success that fan base craves? Whereas four or five losses of individual players, and granted, they were all very important players, but you're four or five players away from collapse. The way
it happens too, I mean, remember, you have a 99% win probability against Indiana. You pull that out, perhaps things look different now. But I don't know. I mean, I just think they are having a terrible year. I don't necessarily think that it means they're going to be bad forever or that they need to make a change.
And everything is relative too, because it's just like, they're not going to be bad forever. They're not going to go 0-5 the next 3 years. I get that. It's a matter of whether or not they can return to the normal standard of what Penn State has been the last 5 years, which is a big pain in Ohio State's butt and winning 10 or 11 games and maybe winning the Big Ten once at every 4 years. That again?
Yes. And the thing that we need to watch, I think, is probably our leading indicator will probably be the class of 2022. You know?
Yeah, and they're off to a good start in 22.
So, I mean, that's the thing. Can they get players? And look, there's a lot of time between now and when those guys sign. So, we're over a year from now, a lot can happen. But, if they can get a good class together for 2022, then I think that's your indicator that they're going to be fine as a program.
Yeah. I just... this is the hardest season, Andy, that since I've been in this business and trying to contextualize things.
Yeah, because you don't know what actually means something. Like, I as you can tell from what I've been saying about Penn State, I think this is isolated to this year. What's going on at Florida State is absolutely not isolated to this year. It's been going on for, probably since 2015, 2014. So that requires more kind of excavation. What's going on at Nebraska? What's going on at Nebraska probably goes back to when they fired Frank Solich.
I mean, and there's a correlation between the fan base that you feel bad for and whether or not it's isolated to this year. Like going through the fan bases that we went through 10 minutes ago,
it the ones absolutely that I feel like isn't. The ones I feel like you're going to have to deal out with of it are for fine. Years, that's the ones I feel the worst for.
Yeah. Sometimes things are a little bit more difficult for fans to swallow when there's such high hopes. Like, I feel terrible for Wisconsin's fans.
Yeah.
It's like, how excited were they, and they overcame the COVID stuff, and you're thinking, how many games do they have to win to get to the Big Ten championship? And then all of a sudden they get dropped. And then the other thing too, now Northwestern, I'll give Pat Fitzgerald a lot of credit, man. I don't know if there's another coach outside of the ones that have won national championships who have consistently gotten their team to the ceiling.
Well, and he had to be willing to dump Mick McCall after last year, which was clearly not something he wanted to do, because it's something that kind of the fan base had been pushing for a while. But you're right. I mean, he gets the most out of them. And look, it's interesting that we're talking about Northwestern and we were just talking about Wisconsin, because I think those are probably two examples of programs that get the most out of their talent, that get absolutely every last drop of what they can get out of that talent.
How many coaches in college football can say that they've reached the ceiling of their program multiple times in the last 5 years?
Let's see.
The ceiling, the absolute ceiling. Of their,
Dabo, obviously.
Dabo.
Ed Orgeron.
Nick Saban. Ed Orgeron.
Yeah.
Anybody who hasn't won a national championship?
Pat Fitzgerald. The last time he went.
It's a hard question to put you on the spot on. I understand that.
No.
Think about it. But Pat Fitzgerald has gotten his program to the ceiling.
Yep.
And I just want to make that clear.
I think Hugh Freeze got Ole Miss to the ceiling the year that they probably should have won the West, 2015. The crazy Hunter Henry play keeps them from winning the West. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the ceiling for Ole Miss. They were really good that year. They had a crazy stinker against Florida that they shouldn't have lost. They just never were competitive in that game. But that's probably about as close as to the ceiling as there is.
Do we agree that Northwestern ceiling as a program is Big Ten championship game and 14-point loss to Ohio State in the Big Ten title game?
As long as Ohio State is this, yes.
So to me, it's just that's an NFL coach.
But I feel like Paul Chryst gets to the ceiling all the time too.
Absolutely does. Yeah. And the ceiling for Wisconsin is the same.
Yeah. I would argue that Scott Frost got to the ceiling of UCF, which is why it's so mystifying what's going on in Nebraska.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of anybody else in the group of five or in the lower rungs of the power.
I mean, Mike Leach probably took Washington State to their ceiling.
I would agree with that.
They were in the college football playoff discussion in November 2 years ago. I mean, it's not getting any better than that.
Yeah, and a lot of that was schedule related. They if you look at who they got, who they drew out of the South, and just how that all worked, you know, and who they played on the road, who they played at home. But yes, Washington State is not necessarily a double digit win program. I mean, you think about when Paul Wolf was coaching there. They were losing every game. So yeah, I think that would be one.
Oh, here's another one. Does Matt Campbell have Iowa State at the ceiling?
I was gonna bring him up. I think if Matt Campbell gets Iowa State to the Big 12 championship game, he's done that.
Okay.
They're good enough to be in the Big 12, and hell, they may win the Big 12 this year. So maybe we're wrong. Maybe the ceiling's a little higher. But you know, I thought that team last year was pretty decent, and then they played Notre Dame in that bowl game. And you're like, wow, you see the talent differential between them and Notre Dame. So the fact that they're where they are this season, and look, I know K-State lost their starting quarterback. I know they're not what they were at the beginning of the season, but 45-0 against a well-coached team like that's impressive. Yeah.
Mark Stoops at Kentucky.
The 10-win season, I think, might have been Kentucky's ceiling. I think the Benny Snell, Josh Allen year, I think that was probably Kentucky's ceiling.
Now, let me ask you this one.
Oh, I'll give you one. Steve Spurrier, South Carolina.
Yeah.
3 years in a row.
He's the reason why. Yeah. That's your guy, isn't it?
I think he did a better job at South Carolina than he did at Florida, which is amazing because he revolutionized offense in an entire conference at Florida.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And, you know, now South Carolina thinks that that's the ceiling of their program. And I think it was normal. Just the Spurriers.
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. But what about this one? What about this one? And this one might be kind of controversial because they lost in the national championship game in overtime, I think. Georgia. Is that their ceiling or do you have to win it to get
absolutely not. Georgia's ceiling is what Alabama has done the last 10 years. You could do that at Georgia.
Georgia's ceiling is winning six national championships in 12 years.
If Nick Saban is not a human who works in the SEC, or if Nick Saban's at Georgia, Georgia could easily do that.
Because I think you could make the argument that Georgia is underperforming based on what they have on their roster.
I do make that argument frequently.
I think that, it's not, they've lost two games. They almost lost to Mississippi State. And I think you could also make a discussion that Kirby Smart has made the wrong quarterback related decision every time there's been a quarterback decision to make.
Right.
In his entire tenure.
Here's the thing. He's got the talent acquisition part right. If he can get the quarterback part right, then they are going to, and let's say they start getting the quarterback part right and Nick Saban retires. Then suddenly they are the dominant program in the sport.
This is a fun game. I want to keep playing. Ready?
Okay.
Here's another one.
All right.
What do you think of Texas A&M? What's their ceiling? If they make the playoff this year on some
Texas A&M ceiling
luck,
is a national championship.
Is that their ceiling?
No, their ceiling is a national championship. They have everything they need.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Oh, I do. They have all the stuff. They just need to put the intangible parts together. But
I know, but a lot of places have the stuff.
Right, but there's Michigan no difference the between Texas A&M and Auburn. Like, but Auburn's broken through and won. But there's really, if you just add up access to recruits, facilities, all the other stuff.
Money, yeah.
They're the same. So the fact that Auburn has broken through and Texas A&M hasn't, I think comes down to, you know, maybe you've hired the wrong coaches, maybe you're just unlucky, but their ceiling is a national title because they have all the stuff that you need to win one.
What's Michigan's ceiling?
National title.
Speaking of all...
National title. You threw this stat out the other day that Michigan had offered 21 of the 25 players committed to Ohio State for the class of 2021. If they can take those guys, they can get those guys. You just have to have the right guy in your head coaching chair.
I agree. That's the reason why I freak out all the time.
No, it's definitely, I mean, and when we've
Fickle,
done this,
Cincinnati maybe.
Yeah, he may have them at their ceiling. I am already, really, yeah. I cannot wait to see where the committee puts them because I think they are as good as UCF in 2017. And I just don't know. I don't know what that would mean against an Alabama or a Clemson or a Notre Dame, but I know it means they're pretty darn good. And I know it means they beat most teams in the Power Five.
I don't mean to rain on your parade, but I don't really think it matters at all where they are.
Oh, I know they don't have a chance to make the playoff. I know, but I'm just curious, how close are they going to get? Because UCF never got close in 17.
Where do you think they're going to be on Tuesday?
I think they're going to be 9 or 10. But they will get jumped by certain
They'll never
teams.
Get higher than 7, probably,
right.
No matter what.
That's probably the limit.
Yeah. 7 is the threshold?
I think so. And well, maybe depending on what happens, like if something crazy happens, like Texas A&M and Florida both lose, you know, before the SEC championship game, maybe they can hop up a little higher. But then I don't know what happens after that. I still don't think they get to 4. I don't see a path for them to get to 4.
Yeah. No, there's no path to get to 4. I think they would force in. Let me ask you this. Who do you think would have a better chance at making the playoff if there were a battle for the 4th spot between 2-loss Oklahoma and Cincinnati undefeated?
Cincinnati. For the reason you gave earlier in the show, where it's not something they're supposed to consider, but in the backs of their minds, it would be there of let's give somebody else a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just too many roadblocks, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. And the good news is, Ari, you will be here with me to break it all down. After the rankings are revealed on Tuesday night, we're going to do a show immediately afterward. You don't have to wait till Wednesday morning. If you're fired up, you can listen to us and yell at us through your phone or through your car stereo right off the bat. So we'll be recording that on Tuesday night. It's going to be fun. I don't know if there are going to be any surprises or not, but given what we've talked about tonight, Ari, I think they're going to give us quite a bit to chew on.
Yeah, my favorite thing to do in the entire world is talk about the playoffs. So I can't wait once we get a list to break down and see where things are at. And, you know, I have lost my mind with the committee the last 7, 8 years, going on the conference call and asking questions and trying to understand the inconsistencies in the thought process. And, you know, having somebody to scream about it with is going to be fun.
It is going to be outstanding. So remember, subscribe, rate, review this podcast. If you are not already a subscriber to The Athletic, we would love to have you. Unlike Sony, which makes PlayStations very hard to buy and doesn't want to take your money. I don't think Ari has one yet. We love your money and would love to take it. So theathletic.com/Andy Staples, and you get your subscription for $1 a week for your first 6 months. Also, you get to listen to this podcast commercial free if you'd like. So it's just yet another bonus. All right. Playoff rankings are coming out on Tuesday, and we will be yelling about them immediately afterward. We'll talk to you Tuesday night.